Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast. Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Now I'm a union man, amazed at what I am. I say what I think, that the company stinks. Yes, I'm a union man. When we meet in the local hall, I'll be voting with them all. With a hell of a shout, it's out, brothers, out. And the rise of the company's fall. Oh, you don't get me, I'm part of the union. You don't get me, I'm part of the union. You don't get me, I'm part of the union. Till the day I die. Till the day I die.
As a union woman, I'm wise to the lies of the company spies.
And she don't.
Retired from work, but not from the struggle. That's the catch cry of the MUA veterans, and we've got a special guest with us here today. You're listening to the Fire Up MUA on 3CR Radical Radio. My name's David Boyle, and I'm here with my usual co-host, Dean Borg. How are you, Dean?
I'm fantastic. This beautiful early morning in Melbourne, going great.
It's a beautiful, fresh morning. Of course, we've got our producer, Annie. How are you, Annie?
I'm good. And you're right, it is. It's a beautiful day. Weird. Last night was beautiful too.
Yeah. No wind. Not a breath of wind.
Yeah, considering the turbulent weather we've been having.
Yeah. We're very privileged here today to have a very special guest, someone who's been a unionist for many, many years. I won't say how long, but many, many years. He's got a very colourful background. Wharfie, once a Wharfie, always a Wharfie, but also an ex-official of the Victorian branch of the MUA, the current Secretary of the Veterans of the Victorian branch of the MUA, and also the MUA's head trainer. I'd like to welcome Dave Cushions to the microphone. How are you, Dave?
Yes, I'm very well, thank you, Dave.
You also describe yourself as a Maoist, mate. What's that about?
That was in my dark youth, following the teachings of the chairman.
Very good.
Why not?
As a few of us did in those days.
There was a big crowd. Who else was a Maoist back then?
Well, Teddy Ball, the gang I used to work in, Gang 60, was an old gang. You were either a hippie or a communist in the old gang. In fact, one of these studios here in 3CR was named after one of our gang members, Jack the Hat. He was one of the founders of this 3CR.
Well, we're actually in his studio.
There
Jack the Hat Davison.
Oh, that's it.
He died very young, though.
He was a young man, yeah. He was a colourful character, Jack, that's for sure.
What's that, 40?
46.
46 years of age, wow.
Yeah.
Of course, the MUA do have a very proud history with 3CR. Jim Beggs also did the program back in the 50s. I believe there was a minor fallout at one stage, and the program went off the air for a while, but all those wounds were healed.
Well, you have those things, you know. In a family, you will just have disputes, you know. You get over them. As long as you come together in the hard times, you'll always survive.
Well, that's it. We all have
that's how families work, isn't it?
That's it.
So you have been doing this for decades, Dave.
There's no need to bring that up.
You know, meeting you for the first time down at East Swanton, and from memory, correct me if I'm wrong, you were training in some capacity at East Swanton.
Well, I was avoiding work mostly.
Was it around 94?
Yes. I think the first thing I had to do of sort of training was when there were big intake, just before the Patrick's dispute. There was a big intake. A lot of the older guys retired, and there was a big intake, so I had a lot of young guys coming through, and I did the training for those young guys.
Is that why they took the opportunity to... caused that dispute? Did they think with the changing of the guard it would make a difference?
There was There was some of that in it. No, I think mainly it was, you know, the machinations of the Howard government and the coalition government. I think you can put it down to that. And the employer, you know, Chris Corrigan was very, you know, he's one of those guys, wasn't he? So I think basically Howard found a sort of fellow traveller in Corrigan. Someone who was willing to do it. A lot of the others didn't want to take it on, and the result was probably the reason why they didn't want to take it on. You know, this is a fighting union, always has been, so we fought it to the end, and we were successful.
Here to stay.
Here to stay, that's right. That came out of that very struggle.
And that's something that probably a lot of people don't realise, that slogan did emerge out of the Patrick's dispute.
Yeah, it did. And I think Johnny Higgins might have.
I think it's pretty funny too that a lot of people, they're saying touch one, touch all, which is a CFMEU catch cry, given the situation that's going on at the moment. I just find that really amazing.
Yeah,
I think that actually goes back to the Wobblies.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the ILWU slogan?
An injury to one is an injury to all.
That's right. Same thing. I think that was the actual maybe the Wobblies slogan. Yeah. That's where they got it from, and then the CFMU.
Well, isn't that interesting? That's how history works, isn't it? They've given all this, all those people who died fighting this fight, and this is the contribution. They're the bedrock of the union movement, really, aren't they?
Yeah. Well, I think anyone who's done, no one's done it, they should do it. Done a tour of the Trades Hall. That's a really great sort of look at what the trade union's actually done. As they peeled all the old paint and stuff off the walls, what's now appearing is all the stuff that was put there in, you know, at the turn of the last century. So what you see then is that the trade unions were directors and were big contributors to actually the setting up of the things like the Royal Children's Hospital, Royal Melbourne Hospital, RMIT, its original, you know,
Working Men's College.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So, you know, they were really integral to how this country grew. And apart from that, you know, the sort of conditions that they came, you know, that they fought for and were able to achieve. The 8-hour day before anyone else had it. You know, women's role in the trade union movement. You know, some of the early successes were the Seamstresses Union and the very large female unions, because there were large female workforces, obviously, in those days as well.
And the location was pretty specific, wasn't it, Dave? They located Trades Hall there close to the jail so they could lock us all up. They didn't have to drag us too far when we had a blue on, or we played up a little bit.
Yeah, well, that's right. I think originally they wanted to have it up near Parliament House, but the politicians, as politicians are, wanted to be nowhere near us, as they usually do, and wanted to situate it a bit closer to the Melbourne jail.
Well, it's funny you should say, the road. It's really interesting when you do a bit of history, because actually where the jail is, and where RMIT is, and that point where Tanaminawe Malboy Heaney were hung, the two Aboriginal fellows, the freedom fighters, were hung just on that point. That was the extent of Melbourne's, it was, you know, the furthest point of the settlement at the time. Which is, you know, does your head in a bit, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And I was reading, this history of this fellow whose ancestor had a farm on the corner of Burke and Spring.
Wow. That's wild.
Yeah.
It's changed
Sheep
a lot.
Grazing and cattle in the middle of the CBD.
Isn't that fantastic? Anyway, I digress.
So, Dave, you were on the wharf leading into the Patrick's dispute?
Yeah, I was a delegate there. Well, you know, the Patrick's dispute was obviously East Swanson Dock and Webb Dock. It started at Webb Dock. In fact, we were working at Webb Dock in the early days. They partitioned Webb Dock in half. People probably don't know what Webb Dock is, but it's down in Port Melbourne. And they partitioned it, and one side had the scabs and the other side had, I'd say, as you can imagine, it was fairly fraught. So you'd go to work, I don't know, unloading a steel boat or a car job or something, and then go to the picket line afterwards.
No, sure.
Yeah, so.
You know, these days you're supposed to say, in those days they called them scabs.
No, we still call them scabs.
They're still scabs.
So, Dave, it wasn't long after the Patrick dispute you ended up in the office as the Assistant Secretary of the Victorian
Yes, Brand. I stood for office and got elected. And
what year was that, Mark?
Oh, Jesus. It must be 99 or something.
99, yeah. Straight after the dispute.
Yeah, yeah, 98 maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I think it was then, mate.
Yeah, definitely.
And yep. 12 years of in office, that would have been an exciting time?
Well, yes, it was. I don't know if exciting's the right word for it, but it was different, that's for sure.
It's so, probably a Chinese, going back to your past as a Maoist, you know, when the Chinese talk about if you live in exciting times, it's not necessarily a positive.
That's exactly right. But yeah, it's, you know, there's nothing better, I suppose, than working for the members of this union. This is a very, I've just been doing some training. That's what we talk a lot about the history of this union, you know, that we're a rank and file union, that we differ from a lot of other unions in that regard, that we're you know, the policies are made by the rank and file, they're voted on by the rank and file. When we do EBAs, the rank and file are part of that process. We don't have just officials going and negotiating an agreement. The delegates that are integral to that part of things. So when we do the training, we talk a lot about that. It's the history of our union, and we should be proud of it. And I think it's one of the maybe the things the union movement hasn't been very good of is talking about how well they've done and how what an integral part of this country's history they are and what a lot they've done for this country. You know, you get this denigration from the business sector and, you know, obviously the politicians have always hated us. But we've done a lot. We've contributed a lot to how this country's evolved, you know.
The well-being of working people.
Yeah, but even more than that, the ability to welcome people who've come to this country, you know, and this country was, you know, you talked about settlement before, you know, the land never ceded to from the indigenous people of this country. So there's been waves and waves of migrants, you know, and our history has been one of not always welcoming them, but we certainly, as we grew as a movement, we've always welcomed new immigrants into this country because we all were that at one stage.
Well, it's sort of like the Australian community growing up, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
What the union movement has done is faced its demons and stood there and faced it down, really.
Yes, and I mean, another thing we've always been proud of is that we've always taken a viewpoint of if bad was done to us, we wouldn't like that to happen to other people. So we've always been an internationalist movement. I mean, from the very early days of the movement, even before we were the WWF and the Maritime Union, we contributed a lot. Big strike in the UK, minor strike in the UK in the 1890s. We were the biggest contributor of funds for those workers. Then the Dulfram dispute.
You're talking about the 1980s?
No, the 1890s.
Yeah, wow.
So the 1890s, we did that. There was a big fundraising effort to send money. You know, that stage too, we're very tied to England, you know.
Yeah. But there's also the Asian region as well, Indonesia and Japan. And, but
Timor-Leste.
But the MUA itself, of course, is an internationalist perspective because the seafarers.
Yeah, seafarers and waterside workers, and that's right, that's who we work with. We work with international workers, we see the issues that international workers have, but we've always had that. I mean, because we've connected like that, we were involved in things like when the Japanese were bombing China, we started stopped shipping pig iron to Japan. You know, that's where pig iron Bob Menzies got his name from, that dispute. After the Second World War, when the Dutch wanted to go back into Indonesia, we stuck with the Indonesian seafarers in both Sydney and Melbourne and did a lot of work. And I think the new president of Indonesia actually mentioned this in his acceptance speech, you know. He talked about the MUA and the role of Australia in Indonesia's independence. After that, Vietnam. South Africa.
Someone was talking about the other day about Mandela coming here, Nelson Mandela specifically coming to Australia, coming to Melbourne, talking at the town hall to thank the unions and particularly the MUA for your support during the anti-apartheid struggle.
Correct. Yeah, that's correct. He met with the officials both in Melbourne and Sydney, came to the office to talk to us about that, because we were the first to start up the oil embargo against South Africa. So we've had, you know, that's our history, and it's a proud history, and I don't think we've communicated it well enough, you know, about what our role has been in this society, you know. And the positive thing because when they talk about unions, generally it's talked about in a negative sense, you know.
Well, of course, because they own except for places like 3CR, they own the message.
That's correct, you know. I suppose it's breaking out a bit now. It seems to be breaking a bit more right-wing than left-wing, but, you know, the sort of hold of people like Murdoch and that is slipping, I'm sure.
Oh, the media just blow up the right wing. I'm not sure there's that many of them out there. They're just loud, and the media like to exploit them and, make a lot of noise. Just with the apartheid campaign in South Africa, Dave, do you draw similar lines between that and what's happening in the Gaza and the MUA support of Gaza? And I know it was everybody wasn't on board back then when the MUA started opposing apartheid, were they?
No, they weren't. You know, apart from us, we opposed it, but other people opposed it when the South African rugby team came out. There was big demonstrations about the Springbok, anti-Springbok demonstrations. And, you know, the press were furious about this, you know. And even,
don't bring politics into sport.
Exactly. We had all this stuff. They still go on about it. And when they barred the South Africans out of cricket because of apartheid, and there was Australians who went over there. And, you know, Howard and all these people, all these coalition people, all supported this rebel tours. They all talk about Mandela like he was a saint now, but then he was a communist and a terrorist.
And a terrorist.
Yeah. He was both those things. That's what they used to call him. He's a terrorist. He's a communist. He will ruin South Africa, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, it comes around. And then now we see a genocide live, you know.
Well, I'll tell you something for free. I remember when I was young, I went to they did an anti-apartheid thing at the airport against South African Airlines. And Hawke, who was Prime Minister at the time, was fully supportive of the South Africans. Yeah. Now, the thing is that Hawke himself is considered to be a saint now that he's dead.
Yeah. I suppose you get sainthood applied to you, you know.
Well, on that note, we better go to a song. We got a first song for you. It's by Hound Dog Taylor. It's called Shake Your Moneymaker. I hope you enjoy it.
Trying to quit me, man, but I love her still. She rolls her money maker, baby, she really can shake it. She's working her money maker, baby, you're real all right. Roll your money maker. Shake your money maker, baby, you'll read all right. Roll
Taylor doing a thing called Chic, your moneymaker, baby.
Welcome back to Fire Up MUA 3CR Radical Radio. You're with David Ball, Dean Borg, Annie, and of course our special guest, Dave Cushion. Dave, there's been some big changes in the MUA over recent weeks, although they haven't played out completely, but you've obviously lived a long time through...
You keep talking about that.
Through the current leadership, of course, I'm talking about Paddy Crumlin announcing his retirement.
Yeah, I suppose what's happened with that is a bit what happened when John Coombs retired again after the big dispute. What happened then was John retired, Paddy came in to take his position and then faced election shortly after that, about 2 years after that, maybe not even 2 years. So, yeah, it's a process that we've done. Paddy's still involved. Paddy still does the sort of ITF stuff. But I think that's good. I think as a union, you have to refresh yourself. You have to always be moving. One of the great things about doing the training is to see all the young people who are involved in it, especially a lot of young women coming into the industry and, you know, getting involved in training. And they come from all sorts of places. They come from fish farms down in Tasmania, the ferries in Sydney. So, you know, it's good to see that and their involvement in it. So there's been talk about it because when I was in South Australia, obviously the meeting was on, the monthly meetings, and there was some discussion about it. And we reminded everyone that this isn't something that's new. This has happened in the past.
Are you talking about guided democracy?
Well, I'm an old male, so guided democracy is obviously something that's close to the heart, you know. What would I be complaining about that, you know? But, no, in the end, like I said, we were a rank and file union, and the...
Well, people don't go in forever.
No, well...
No, that's right.
Some people would like to, but, you know, there's always a finite...
Well, tell that to Trump.
That's right, you know.
And, you know, Jake Field... you know, being Paddy's replacement, Dave. You know, Jake comes from a seafaring background.
Yeah, he did both, I think. I think he came from the grain terminal in South Australia, actually. Jake came from the grain terminal. Then he was a seafarer. He was a wharfie.
Yeah.
But in the end, it's the members. I mean, this is a sort of interim decision as it was when Paddy took the job. And the ultimate arbitrators are the members because they're going to have to vote on it. I mean, we take our... voting and our democracy of this union very seriously. We still, one of the few unions who still conduct our own ballots. Mm. I think we're moving, and it's difficult because unlike most places where people are, if you like, static, they're in one workplace, ours isn't like that. We've got guys in targs, guys on ships all over the place. So, you know, the process is usually taken. Our elections were taken over a long period. I think it was about 6 weeks they ran for. But we'll shorten that up, hopefully, now with the introduction of technology and stuff. But, I mean, we did that. It went for 6 weeks because we wanted to make sure everyone had a say. That's, again, if you pride yourself on being a union that represents the rank and file and has the involvement of the rank and file in all your decisions, well, the election's the biggest decision of all. That's correct. Who they're going to be represented by.
And, of course, they went for 6 weeks to allow a seafarer to get home.
That's right. I mean, there's obviously reasons for that. And it was about the seafarers, because the rules changed when we amalgamated. The old WWF election used to happen on the day. They used to come down on
show of hands?
No, they used to come on the job site, take your number. You know, we always had numbers we used to work with. Took your number and marked you off the roll. Yeah.
Was it a secret ballot or...?
Yeah, it was a secret ballot. They used to bring the ballot box down. You would get the papers, you know, a bit like any election. Get the papers, you fill in the paper, put it back in the ballot box.
It's funny, you know, because reading a bit of history, you forget that a whole lot of things have been won. One of them was secret ballots.
Yeah, that's right.
Which is really important. The other one is, I was reading about the 8-hour day stuff. The arguments that were put forward about the 8-hour day. A lot of things about workers, I don't think people realise, but they had to argue that workers were human beings. This is pretty important.
Yeah, well, that's right. That was the old Masters and Servants Act. That's what you either were, a master or you were a servant. You know, you were someone to be bossed around or you were someone who did the bossing around.
Voting's on a, you know, don't take it for granted. That's all.
No, that's right. I mean, people, a lot of people died for voting rights, you know, and still do around the world, you know. Well, the South End, when we talked about apartheid before, that was about South African people being allowed to vote, you know.
Mm. We still have votes in our hall, show of hands for EAs, although I believe the commission is tightening down on it, and eventually we're probably going to end up with electronic voting, which is unfortunate because it is part of our culture.
It is part of our culture, but, you know, we move along with things and I suppose we will accept that as we do everything else. I mean, the thing about it is again, the thing about a union is that, you know, it is the members who make the decisions. And if they make it by a secret ballot or a show of hands, they will make the decision.
Yeah.
And we're confident in their ability to do that too.
Well, that's the thing. That they are people that are worthy of a vote.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So it's exciting times at the MUA. There is change in the wind, and we're going to work with Jake and the new leadership team, and we're looking forward to continue on the struggle and continue on the fight. Dave, it's been a great pleasure to have you here today. And
I'm usually up at this time of the day, you know, unless I've been up all night. I haven't done that for quite a while, you know, as you would imagine.
Thanks heaps for coming in, mate.
Yeah, thanks, comrade.
We're going to go out with our final song. It's by a young fella from America. He's a bit of a protest folk singer, songwriter, Jesse Wells. The song is called Venezuela. I hope you enjoy it.
2,500 miles away from the American border, there's a boat humming along with 100 miles worth of gas. It's got some fishermen out there in it. Little do they know, but here in a minute, they'll be sunk down to the bottom and dead from an American blast. Now our infallible intelligence knows a whole lot about them. See, these are narco-terrorists with drugs strapped to their back. Now it's the same intelligence that had the perfect wisdom and the real good sense to know there's weapons of mass destruction hidden in Iraq. Well, if your leader is a fugitive of American justice, and if your people need liberating from their own soil, if you're a threat to our national security, well, we're probably just in need of your oil. How much fentanyl does Venezuela make? Well, Johnny, that's about 0%. See, the precursors are shipped from China into Mexico. They mix them in a lab, then they press them into pills and ship them up to Uncle Sam. Oh, well then, how much cocaine does Venezuela make? Well, Johnny, that's another goose egg too. But don't you worry your little head, because they're all just going to be like dead. Some call it murder, some call it justice. You can call it whatever you like. Dry your liberal tears, cause you know around here we call it a presidentially authorized lethal kinetic strike. Well, if it smells like Al-Qaeda and looks like ISIS, you're staring down the barrel at a refugee crisis. Well, they can dangle the Nobel carrot out in front of the mule, but I guess it wasn't orange enough to really pull the cart. Pete and Marco, come out of the closet and say you're coming on in for that oil deposit. The only war you'll ever end is the one you start.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.